You're listening to Rambling Business, the only multimedia podcast with Rick and Brandon,
where we get into your business no matter where it is.
And today we'll be talking about the spirits of Canada. Not ghosts. Liquor.
Oh.
Rambling Business leaves our Glendale, Arizona business series and heads way, way up north across the border to Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, beautiful BC, as it says on their license plates. There, Rick and Judy talked to Craig Harris, manager of the Yaletown Distilling Company, to learn about their unique role in producing vodka, gin, and whiskey. Also, stay tuned to our tax tales and business takeaways coming up.
On December 5th, 2013, which happens to be the anniversary of Repeal Day, marking the end of Prohibition, that's got to be Canada, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that can't be the U.S. I never heard of Repeal Day before.
Me neither. Well, I mean, there's a lot of holidays that you have probably haven't heard of.
That's right. St. Sylvan's Day, I bet you don't know when that is.
No, but I've heard of it. It's September 15th. I don't know.
Well, so on December 5th in 2013, a local entrepreneur group, the Mark James Group, built the Yaletown Distilling Company in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. One of its purposes was to serve their established restaurant, the Distillery Bar and Kitchen, and it's also to do artisan distilling.
Small batch distilled stuff.
I know. It sounds like you need a palette for this. Oh, yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not the kind you paint with.
Yeah. Or the kind you taste with.
That's right.
And also not the kind that you put a whole bunch of stuff on.
Right.
To use a forklift.
Yeah, there it is. Right. That's right.
They probably use pallets too in the back when they shipping things, you know.
Probably. But there was a metamorphosis to this business. It didn't just pop up, you know, with like, hey, let's start a distilling company. There was this metamorphosis where they were already a brewery company in 1994 and wanted to make the transition into distilling spirits.
The stronger stuff.
Right. And we've done this stuff. We've done breweries and we've done distilleries before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really up and coming now. It's really interesting. They were the number one brew pub in Vancouver, but not a microbrew like we found in San Diego. And they had learned that a microbrewery is a small brewery with an annual brewing capacity of less than, now this is their term, 17,600 hectoliters.
Mm-hmm. Which is what? What does that mean for us?
I think it's an eye drop.
Oh, no, I don't think that's true. I've had at least more than a drop of microbrew beer.
Oh, okay. So that's 100 liters, basically.
Okay.
Hectoliters, 100 liters. It has the ability to sell its products in bottles and beers, you know, beer cans, in wine stores, and through different provincial liquor distributions. Now, so this is what we saw with our microbreweries when we were in San Diego. You know, they do beer production generally measured in this large quantity for the public. But a brew pub must operate a pub that must sell 100% of its beer on site.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
They can only sell their own beer.
Right. I think they could sell other people's beer, but they don't put it for sale to the public outside the pub.
Oh, so they can't export their beer outside of this pub.
Right. They don't put it in a liquor store or something.
Hmm.
The bottom line is that it's fresh, handcrafted beers that you're not going to find anywhere else because you go there.
Yeah, location. You have to be a destination because you can't get it anywhere else if you like it.
Right. And the other thing I found out is that there are two families of beer. Now, I'm not the beer drinker, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
Your mother is. Yeah, she's the beer drinker. There's two types of beers, families of beers, ales and lagers, net lagers. You like ales, right?
I do, yeah.
You're more the ale guy. Okay. And the difference between the two is just in the yeast. Beer type is determined with the type of yeast used. Ale or lager yeast has nothing to do with color, though. It's alcohol content or hops. Because, you know, you hear your mom has IPA. She loves hoppy beer. Mm-hmm. But it has nothing to do with the families of beers. You can put hops in either one of them, I guess.
I'm pretty sure also it has to do with temperature. I'm remembering that lagers were sort of like newer inventions with refrigeration and cool storage.
Well, when you were six and we were in Germany, mm-hmm. all the beer was warm.
Oh, no, I'm talking about how it is brewed.
Oh, okay.
How it's stored and when the fermentation takes place. Uh-huh. I believe lager yeast takes place at a lower temperature, which is why it didn't exist until after refrigeration happened.
Uh-huh.
Because mm-hmm. before that, if you wanted to get a lower temperature, you had to go stick it in some ice.
But didn't you tell me before that beer was created because water was bad?
Yeah, that was some of the European nations, they had very low content of alcohol in the beer, but since, you know, they had no idea why people would get all of these waterborne sicknesses because no one knew about germs yet.
Yeah, right.
So they just knew that if you drank weak beer, you'd be fine. So everyone was just drinking weak beer all the time.
That should be a sales promotion.
Mm-hmm.
Drink our beer and you'll just be fine.
But this is like less, this is like to the point sort of in between non-alcoholic beer and the lowest level of beer that we have. Uh-huh. Very low levels.
Uh-huh.
Very sessionable.
Hmm. So when the distillery started producing the spirits, they initially did it with the concept of supporting the restaurant, like their beer, you know. But then they expanded their output to overtake the beer pub type of mentality and sell over the counter to the general public, which is where we got the drink some. You know, we went to the distillery bar,
mm-hmm.
which was not in a restaurant. It was around the corner down the street.
It was a separate
place altogether. And that's where they also had all those big stills and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like it was really cool because you had a really neat bar and to sit down and taste it. And then you're only like 150 feet away from the still.
That's great.
Yeah, it was really good. So they limit their distribution to British Columbia only because there's so many issues. You know, like here, if you go to sell something outside of California, you're dealing with interstate commerce now.
Mm-hmm. And there's all government. Sorts of different rules and taxes and tariffs and all
and,
that.
And different states have different alcohol content, probably even things.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing in Canada. They have different taxes in different provinces. So they got to be careful what they do. So they just sell it in British Columbia so that they don't have these GST taxes from other places. But what they end up doing is producing vodka, gin, and whiskey.
Ooh, yeah. Canadians have a tradition of whiskey.
Yeah, that's like, is it called Canadian whiskey?
Yeah.
Oh.
Crown Royal, isn't it Crown Royal's Canadian?
No, Grey Goose, isn't it? No.
Grey Goose is a vodka, not a
vodka.
Whiskey.
Oh, it's a vodka. Oh, but that's Canadian probably.
Just because there's a goose, actually, I think Grey Goose is French, but
just
not all goose-related things come from Canada.
Yeah.
Ignorant.
Well, it's either that or I just can't read the label when I'm drinking.
Now, Grey Moose is from Canada.
Hey, Rocky, why'd you pull a rabbit out of my hat? You were too young for that.
Everyone's too young for that.
You never saw Rocky and Bullwinkle?
I mean, reruns.
Oh.
They redid a movie like 15 years ago, so. Oh.
Well, what's really interesting, though, is what they do with vodka up there, is they use just British Columbia grain. That's grown there, barley and wheat. And that's what gives Yaletown vodka its distinct fruity nose. Now, this is amazing. You know, you think about wine, and everybody says, oh, it has a fruity blend and a nice bouquet. But vodka, I mean.
It usually has a nose of nail polish remover to me.
Yeah, because we don't drink a lot, or we mix it.
Yeah.
We mix it usually, right? So we don't really notice
that.
Well,
one of the characteristics of vodka is it's the better the vodka is, the less flavor it has.
Yeah.
You know, because it's distilled more, and they take out less of the, you know, stuff that is in it.
The stuff.
I think I like that's a technical term.
Yeah, term on the stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say contaminants.
Yeah.
That
I think when I look
right.
at the steel and they have all these little glass things and it, you know, it goes up and mm-hmm. it distills it, I think like number three is called the stuff.
Yeah, the stuff. That's the stuff three. They pull out the bottom.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the grain is steeped in hot water and it's converted to grain starches. They convert the grain starches to sugar to be extracted. And then this subsequent sugar-filled, flavorful liquid is called the wort.
Wort?
I know.
Wort? Like on your face?
No. What was that? Who was Vort?
That was
Merlin?
Sword in the Stone.
Sword in the Stone. Yeah. Okay. All right. There we go. That was
that's a deep pull.
Yeah.
From Sword in the Stone.
Yeah.
One of the probably least popular Disney films of all time.
I loved it.
I loved it too.
If you go to Disneyland, you get to pull it out of the rock, you know.
Mm-hmm. Only if you're a kid though.
Yeah, I know. Well, I brought my drill with me once.
Yeah, and that's why you can't go back to Disneyland.
That's right. So after several days of fermentation, this vodka liquid is transferred to a pot in the still in the distillation?
Distillation. That's why it's called a still.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I get it. Begins.
You're working it out.
I'm getting there. And it purifies the flavors and it washes them and different things like the alcohol. And then they run it through a second time to make sure that it's even a higher quality. So they do it twice. And in the final stage, they bottle it. But you know what they also do? What he said when I was talking to him is he said that they infuse different flavors like honey and espresso in the vodka. And we tasted that. That was good.
And it was really good.
Yeah. Craig gave us some samples and we were drinking and it was really good. And you know, I'm not a big vodka drinker, except I drink it with mixed things. I make mixed drinks with it.
Mm-hmm.
But this by itself was really good. I really had a good time doing that. Now, gin is different. That distilling process is a neutral spirit, and they require three distillations.
Yeah, so the more times you distill it, the less flavor remains in the liquor itself.
Oh, makes sense.
Because you're basically distilling you're boiling.
Yeah, you're pulling out the different things out of it, right?
The alcohol...
the stuff.
Becomes more volatile sooner than the rest of the stuff does.
But on the third distillation, herbs and spices are added to the still, and then that distillation begins. And so this is really another way of them putting flavors in the gin. And then they just label this thing, and it served to me. And then I become more educated.
And inebriated.
But one thing that's really cool about this place is that Spirits Business Magazine labeled them as one of the world's top 10 distillery bars.
That's great.
World's. I went to that site and I looked it up. And they had in the top 10, they had them from all over the world.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got to be really good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when they say world, they mean it. Not like the World Series. To learn more about Yaletown Distilling Company, go to www.yaletowndistilling.com. You're listening to Rambling Business. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Rick E. Norris and Accountancy Corporation. If you'd like to get the full experience, check out our website for videos, music, pictures, takeaways, and travel tips. www.ramblingbusiness.com. Now it's time for our tax tales, where we tell you about strange and unusual taxes from the past and the present.
Tax tales.
Oh, woo.
And since we're talking about Canada, we thought we'd talk about a very interesting Canadian tax on pensions, or lack of a tax. If you're a Canadian veteran and you have a pension, you don't have to worry about taxes. But if you have a veteran's pension from another country, it might be taxed, but only if Canada was not an ally at the time of the war. So if you have a pension from an enemy country from the war, you are taxed on it, but not for allies.
This is so goofy, because let's take the United States, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say somebody comes from Vietnam with a pension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they say, well, you're now an ally of us, but you weren't back in the 1960s.
That's so weird.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
That's
Germany?
Yeah.
Germany wasn't an ally back in the 1940s. So does Canada recognize them as tax-free?
I'm not sure. It might be depending on when the war was.
Uh-huh.
So it probably has to be... If you were fighting against Canada in that war, then they don't honor it.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's what it means.
So somebody from the Gestapo is not, they're going to pay taxes.
That's true. I don't think there's many people still getting World War II pensions.
I guess I've been reading too much of Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
You know, they have Hitler in South America still, I think.
Oh, yeah. Are you sure that's Mad Magazine or like Weekly World News? Or?
No, it was Mad Magazine because there was a drawing of him. He was a waiter.
Oh, yeah. I don't think he'd like that. And I wouldn't like him to be my waiter either. Now it's time for our travel tip, where we tell you what fun things you can do in the Vancouver area.
Vancouver is a pretty big place there in British Columbia, Canada. You have like Northern Vancouver and you know, all these different
places. It's like the big city there.
Yeah, yeah. But if you're staying in downtown Vancouver, you actually could take a nice long walk west to Stanley Park. Your mom and I did that. We walked along the shore and went to this big park. Now, we saw not only birds and totem poles, some of them were made over 100 years ago.
Oh, wow.
But we saw markings from beavers. There's beavers there. And so you saw the trees that they gnawed on. And we also saw other trees that they had put wire around so they wouldn't gnaw on them. Yeah. Because they were just chopping too many down. They were busy little beavers.
It's different than what you put around our trees down here to keep rats.
Yeah, rats.
Climbing up to eat the fruit on palm trees.
That's right.
But they have to protect the bottom so the beavers can't knock them down.
Or we protect from the neighbor kid climbing up our tree.
That's true.
88-year-old. There's also this 9 o'clock gun built in 1816 that we saw there.
Mm-hmm.
It's this gun on this island. In 1898, it was taken to the park and fired at 9 p.m. Sunday to mark the close of fishing.
Okay, because they had a lot of late night fishers, I guess it was a problem?
I guess they had longer days up there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But prior to that, the Brockton Point Lighthouse keeper, before this whole time was happening, he would, instead of they had the cannon, he would throw a stick of dynamite over the wall at 9 o'clock so everybody could set their clocks.
Oh, my gosh.
And we were walking there. We were at the lighthouse.
No.
Yeah, I know which wall he was throwing over, too.
Could you see it? Was there, like, barks and blasts scoring?
It was crazy. So, I mean, they used this gun not only for the ending the fishing thing, but also for people to set their clocks because they knew it was at 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And they started doing it, I think, every night. And I don't remember hearing
it. What's wrong with the clocks in Canada that people have to check them every night?
I don't know. You know, they're not Swiss.
Yeah.
You know that.
I guess.
So maybe
I guess if they're all hanging out at the distillery, you got to make sure your watch is right.
So you walk out to Stansbury Park, which is like a peninsula. It's looking back towards Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
The gun's facing it.
Yeah.
So don't put anything in the barrel, please, when you fire that thing at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, just powder.
I think it was aimed towards our hotel, too, really.
Yeah, but when you stay in that room, that's the best room to stay in. You open both windows on each side. The shell goes right through.
That's right.
Now it's time for our takeaways, where we tell you what steps you can take to implement what we've been talking about on the podcast. The first thing to think about is you have to start with your core competency. For Yale Town, it was the restaurant and beer, and they chose to do a brew pub and not a microbrewery to work both services in harmony and basically make their restaurant a destination that you had to go to get this delicious beer.
Number two, consider vertical integration, which in this case means to supply products to your retail outlet for selling. So vertical integration is in the production line, and basically is that if somebody is distributing something, a product, you're moving to the part of making that product.
Mm-hmm.
Or you maybe move to
getting the raw materials
right,
to make that
or
product.
Maybe if you're like a wholesaler, you may move down the line to being a retailer. So that's what vertical integration is, where you're actually doing that. Ford, Henry Ford did that. He would have, he'd make cars. He'd have his own steel mill.
Mm-hmm. And rubber plantations
in I think in Philippines or South America.
Burma?
I forget. You know, I thought it was the Philippines. Your mom corrected me. I thought she said South America. Mm. But whatever it was, he had his own rubber. Mm-hmm. So there was nothing that could disrupt his production line.
Yeah, and that's like the opposite of horizontal, which is like buying up all of the same businesses as
right.
you.
Exactly.
So you could own all the trains or whatever.
Right.
The third thing to think about is when expanding, think about your limitations. Yale Town decided to just distribute in British Columbia because distributing outside of British Columbia would have had a whole bunch of tax and extra paperwork and all that. So rather than, having to deal with all that, they decided to keep it within British Columbia.
And I'm sure they needed security from the Mounties,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And Sergeant Pepper and his dog, Spark.
I thought he had a Lonely Hearts Club Band.
No, it's Sergeant Preston. No, Sergeant Preston is his dog. I can't remember his name now. I used to listen to that program.
Oh, well.
I don't know.
No one else knows what you're talking
about. Right into us, please. Scout, maybe. I don't know. Number four, once you made the first step into your vertical integration, see if you can duplicate that step for other products. So in this case, they did it with beer. Then they went to distillery products. And soon, Craig told me, they're going to wine.
Oh, great. They're going to have all the big spirits.
Yeah, that's right.
Now it's time to answer a question from one of our listeners. We have an email from Rob who says, I'm thinking of opening a restaurant and I want to know what I should do with record keeping.
You know, Rob, when my grandparents opened a restaurant, we had this 1920 cash register.
Don't do that.
That your mother would, like, it only had, I think it had $1, $5, and $10. That's all the buttons that were on it. And then change, like 30 cents, 40 cents, and like that.
Yeah.
So your mom had to put all of her fingers on the things. Like, it was like, say, it's $10.42. She had to go 10, 40, and then 2, and push them down at the same time. And it would go, ching.
Oh, geez.
But if the bill was like $50, she would have to push the 10 down 5 times. So you'd hear this, ka-ching, 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 ka-ching. Like,
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It was crazy. And that cash register is probably worth about $5,000 right now.
Yeah, because it's classic. But don't do that, because that is a terrible way to keep track of things in a business these days.
A better way is the computerized point of sale system, also known as POS. That system really is the brains behind the cash register. And when you're looking for one, make sure it connects with your accounting software, like QuickBooks or something that you're using, NetSuite or another one of these softwares, and that it produces reports that are meaningful to you. If they say, oh, we can produce these 15 reports, and you look at the reports and you say, what does this mean? Then it's not going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
You got to produce reports that mean something to you.
And making sure it can export that info into an accounting software means that you don't have to pay someone to re-enter everything.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, that would be terrible. That's all we have for this week. Tune in next week when we walk a couple of miles south in Vancouver to Granville Islands, where Rick and Judy met an artist at the public market who sees faces in rocks.
It's amazing.
Oh, yeah, the art is... I saw a lot of pictures of it. It's very cool. But till then, I'm Brandon.
This is Rick, and thank you for letting us get into your business, no matter where it is. Our music and podcast was produced by my son, Devin S. Norris. For all your music composition and podcast needs, check out devinsnorris.com.